but my starfighters will attack. No! Doriana snapped, making a grab for the activator. But his reach was too short, his grab too late. Twisting his long arms out of range, Cav triumphantly keyed the activator. Swearing viciously, Doriana looked over at the asteroid where the lines of droid starfighters waited. Nothing happened. Again, Cav keyed the switch. Again, nothing.
I'm afraid that won't work, Vice Lord, Mithron Nuruado said calmly. I took the liberty of removing the alternate command layer your programmers had created in the starfighter's systems.
Slowly, Cav lowered the activator.
You are very clever, Commander.
Someday, that cleverness will turn against you.
Perhaps, Mithron Nuruado said.
Until then, allow me to thank you for showing me how such secondary programming is done. That will prove useful today.
So, what now? Doriana asked cautiously.
We talk to them,
Mithron Nuruado said, keying his board.
Communications. Create a channel.
By the time Lorana arrived, D1's bridge had become a hive of quiet pandemonium. Sabaoth was standing beside Captain Pakmilu's command chair, his back stiff as he gazed out the canopy. Outside the canopy, arrayed in the distance in front of them like a pack of hunting howl runners, were a dozen small ships of a configuration Lorana had never seen before. The readback seems to indicate that we're in the middle of a planetary mass shadow, the engineering officer was saying tautly as Lorana reached Pakmilu's side. But you can see for yourself, that can't possibly be right.
This is Commander Mithron Nuruado of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet.
A cultured voice boomed over the bridge speakers.
Please respond.
Who's that? Lorana asked.
The commander of that force over there,
Pakmilu rumbled, still studying the readouts.
He's been calling every 5 minutes for the past half hour.
You haven't answered him?
Master Sabaoth has forbidden it,
Pakmilu growled.
He insists we know what happened to our hyperdrive before we reply.
Lorana grimaced. Let me talk to him. Sabaoth was still gazing at the alien ships as Lorana joined him.
So, Jedi Jinsler, we meet our first challenge.
Why does it have to be a challenge? Lorana asked. Maybe all he wants to do is talk.
No, Sabaoth said. I can sense a deep malice out there. Malice directed at my ships and my people.
Command, this is Manin.
A voice came from the command chair speaker.
We're standing ready at D4's weapon systems.
Acknowledged, Sabaoth said. Dreadnought 4 was the last. Now we're ready to talk.
Deliberately, he lowered himself into Pakmilu's command chair and touched the comm switch.
Alien Force, this is Jedi Master Jura Sabaoth, commanding the outbound flight project of the Galactic Republic.
Lorana looked back at Pakmilu, wincing to herself at Sabaoth's casual preemption of his command authority. But there was no resentment in the Mon Cal's expression or stance, only a quiet sense of resignation. Apparently, he bowed to the inevitable.
Master Sabaoth, this is Commander Mithron Nuruado.
The cultured voice replied promptly.
Let me see your face, Sabaoth ordered. There was a brief pause.
Then the comm display came to life, showing a near-human with blue skin and blue-black hair and glowing red eyes.
There are matters of great importance we need to discuss at once. Would you care to join me in my flagship, or shall I come to you?
Sabaoth snorted gently.
I will discuss nothing until you stand away from my path.
And I will continue to hold here until we have spoken. Are the Jedi afraid of talk?
Sabaoth smiled thinly.
The Jedi fear nothing, Commander. Come aboard, then, if you insist. A hatchway will be illuminated for your shuttle.
Cardas had been waiting for nearly 3 hours before the Mascara again summoned him to the throne room.
All is prepared,
the Vagari informed him.
We fly at once to draw our vengeance from Mithron Nurudo and the Chiss.
Yes, Your Eminence, Cardass said, bowing his head and trying not to look at the half-dozen fresh Jerun bodies scattered around the throne room. Apparently, the Mascara had been playing some more with his new toys. I would once again ask you to remember that my companions and ship are also there, and would beg your soldiers to be careful.
I will remember,
the Mascara promised.
And I will do even more. I have decided you will be permitted the best view possible of the forthcoming battle.
Cardass felt something cold run through him. You mean I'll be on the bridge, Your Eminence?
Not at all. You will be in the forwardmost of my flagship's external bubbles.
Cardass looked sideways to see a pair of armored Vagari striding toward him. I don't understand, he protested. I've offered you the chance at both vengeance and profit.
Or the chance to fly into a trap,
the Mascara said, his voice suddenly icy.
Do you think me a fool, human? Do you think me so proud and rash that I would simply fly a task force to a supposedly small and undermanned Chiss base in my thirst for revenge?
5 minutes later, Cardass was pushed through a narrow doorway in the hull into a zero-G plastic bubble perhaps twice the size of a coffin. Set against the hull on one side of his head was what seemed to be a small air supply and filtering system, while on the other was a mesh bag containing a couple of water bottles and ration bars from the Chiss shuttle, along with a diamond-shaped device of unknown purpose. The fact that Mithron Nurudo was a near-human this far from Republic space had been Lorana's first surprise. More surprising than that were the culture and refinement of his demeanor and speech as he spoke to her and Sabaoth from the other side of the conference room table. His reason for intercepting outbound flight was the biggest surprise of all, and the most chilling. Sabaoth predictably wasn't impressed by any of it. Ridiculous! A mysterious species of conquerors moving across the galaxy toward us? Please. That's the sort of story bad parents frighten their children with. You know everything there is to know about the universe, then? Mithron Nurudo asked politely. I was under the impression that this region of space was unknown to you. Yes, it is, Sabaoth said. But rumors and stories aren't limited by geographical and political boundaries. If a species so dangerous truly existed, we would surely have heard something about them by now. Perhaps, Mithron Nurudo said. But I didn't come here for an open debate. The fact remains that I cannot and will not permit you to continue on through this region of space. You must turn back to the Republic and pledge to never return. Or, Sabaoth challenged. Mithron Nurudo's glowing red eyes were steady on him. Or I will be forced to destroy you. Lorana braced herself for the inevitable explosion, but Sabaoth merely smiled thinly. So says the avian chick to the villainous dragon. Do you truly believe your 12 ships could survive 10 minutes against the firepower I hold here in my hand? Mithron Nurudo lifted his eyebrows politely. Your personal hand? My Jedi are even now standing by in the Com-op center above us, as well as at the weapon stations of each individual dreadnought. Sabaoth said, I'll soon be joining them. And if you've never faced Jedi reflexes and insight, you'll find it a sobering experience. Mithron Nurudo's expression didn't change. Whatever their training, it will do them no good. Your only choices are to leave now and take your people home, or perish. What is your answer? Abruptly, Sabaoth shoved back his chair and rose towering to his full height. We are the Jedi, the ultimate power in the universe, he declared. We will do as we choose, and we will destroy any who dare stand in our way. Lorana stared up at him, her heart suddenly pounding in her throat. What was he saying? What was he doing?
In that event, the conversation is over, Mithron Naruado said. His expression hadn't changed. But as Lorana tore her gaze from Sabaoth and looked at the commander, she could sense a hardening of his resolve that sent a fresh shiver up her back.
I will give you an hour to consider my offer.
The pulsating hyperspace sky flowed past the Vagari warship, closer and more vivid and more terrifying than Cardass had ever seen it. With only a single layer of thin plastic between him and the waves, he couldn't shake the sensation that at any moment they might break through and snatch him away from even the precarious safety of his hull bubble, leaving him to die alone in the incomprehensible vastness of the universe. He tried closing his eyes or turning around so that his face would be to the hull, but somehow that just made it worse. And it would be a 6-hour journey back to the Krustai base. 6 hours of uncertainty and mental agony, along with the emotional strain of the hyperspace sky beating against his transparent coffin. Less than 2 hours after leaving the Jeroen homeworld, the hyperspace sky suddenly coalesced into star lines and collapsed back into stars. There was a click from somewhere beside him.
Human?
The mascara's voice snarled into his ear. Cardass jerked, banging his head on the cold plastic.
Human!
The voice came again. And this time he realized it was coming from the diamond-shaped device he'd puzzled at earlier. The Vagari version of a comlink, apparently. Reaching awkwardly over his shoulder, he grabbed it. Yes, Your Eminence.
What is this trap you have led us to?
I don't understand, Cardass protested. Did your people get the wrong coordinates from the transport's computer?
We have been brought too soon into crawl space,
the mascara bit out.
The stolen shipnet has been used against us.
Behind Cardass came the subtle clicking of locks as someone prepared to open his prison. But how could the Chiss have planned such a thing? He asked, fumbling to get the words out before the door could be opened. They must have been using it on someone else, and we just happened to run into it.
With all of space to choose from?
The mascara shot back.
Ridiculous!
Stranger things have happened, Cardass insisted. Behind him, the hull cracked open. Cardass tensed, but the Vagari outside merely thrust a set of macro binoculars from the Chiss shuttle into his hands.
Look forward,
the mascara's voice ordered.
Tell me the story of this vessel.
The door was slammed shut again behind him. Exhaling some of his tension, Cardass activated the macro binoculars and scanned the sky in front of him. The object of the mascara's interest wasn't hard to locate. It was a set of 6 ships, big ones, arranged around a cylindrical core with tapered ends. It was outbound flight. He took a careful breath. I've never seen anything like it. But it matches the description of a long-range exploration and colony project called Outbound Flight. There are 50,000 of my people aboard those ships, with enough supplies in the storage core to last all of them for several years.
How many fighting machines will they have?
I don't know, Cardass said. There'll be some, certainly. Mostly those bigger tripod-type droidicas to be used as colony boundary guards. Probably a few hundred of those. Most of their droids will be service and repair types, though. They probably have at least 20,000 of those types.
And these mechanical slaves will have the same artificial brains and mechanisms as the fighting machines?
Cardass grimaced. Yes. They could probably all be adapted to combat of some sort, he agreed. But the people there aren't going to just hand them over to you. And those dreadnoughts pack a lot of firepower.
Your concern is touching,
the mascara said, his voice thick with sarcasm.
But we are the Vagari. We take what we want.
There, Mithron Naruado said, pointing at the Springhawk's canopy. You see them? Master Doriana?
They're a little hard to miss, Doriana ground out, his throat tight, as he gazed at the hundreds of alien ships that had suddenly appeared at the edge of Mithron Naruto's gravity field trap. Who the blazes are they?
A nomadic race of conquerors and destroyers, called the Vagari, Mithron Naruto told him.
What are they doing here?
Cab demanded.
How did they find us?
I would imagine we have Cardass to thank for that, Mithron Naruto said calmly.
Doriana stared at the other. You mean Cardass betrayed you?
Cardass has his own concerns and priorities.
Mithron Naruto lifted his eyebrows pointedly at Doriana.
As do we all.
They arrived quite suddenly.
Sabaoth's voice came from Lorana's comlink.
Some ploy of the Chiss, I imagine.
What are they doing? Lorana asked.
So far, just waiting. Captain Pak Milu informs me that their ship design is radically different from that of the Chiss. But of course, that means nothing.
Have you asked the commander about them? Lorana asked. Maybe they have nothing to do with him. Sabaoth snorted.
With all of space for them to fly through? Please.
He broke off as a melodious voice, or possibly two of them, began to speak in the background. What's that? Lorana asked.
They appear to be hailing us,
Sabaoth said.
The alien voices grew louder as the Jedi Master moved closer to one of the bridge speakers. Lorana listened closely. It was a strange language, highly musical, with a distinct sing-song component to it. Master Sabaoth, she called. It doesn't sound like...
Go to Dreadnought 4 and report to Jedi Master Mening and the weapons blisters.
There was a click as he shut off his comlink. Lorana sighed. Yes, Master Sabaoth.
They're probably not answering because they don't understand you, Cardass explained as patiently as his pounding heart would allow. As I said, they're from the same region of space I am, and we don't know the language of the mighty and noble Vagari.
You will soon learn it,
the Mascara promised him coldly.
In the meantime, you will serve as translator.
Cardass grimaced. Of course, Your Eminence.
Of course,
the Mascara said.
Tell me first, how deeply within the vessels will the fighting machines be stored? Will they be at the surfaces, or deeper inside?
Deep inside, Cardass told him.
Good,
the Mascara said with satisfaction.
Then we may destroy as we will without risking our prize.
An unpleasant sensation tingled across Cardass's skin.
Now, speak this. You of the vessel known as Outbound Flight. We are the Vagari. You will surrender or be destroyed.
Or be destroyed.
Lorana looked across the weapons blister at Mening, at the tight set to his mouth. The first voice from the unknown ships had definitely not been human. This one, just as definitely, was. And the human had been speaking basic as well. This wasn't good. A captive from the Republic, she suggested.
Or a traitor, Mening said grimly. Either way, it's going to make this that much trickier.
Not at all.
Sabaoth's voice came from the comm speaker.
There's nothing even a traitor could have told them that will have prepared them for the kind of coordinated defense a Jedi Meld can offer.
With 100 or more warships at their disposal, I can't see them worrying overly much about how tight our defense is, Mening countered.
Patience, Master Mening,
Sabaoth said, his voice glacially calm.
Trust in the Force.
They're moving forward,
Captain Pakmilu's voice cut in.
All weapon stations, stand ready.
Lorana took a deep breath as she stretched out to the Force for strength and calm. This was it. The first genuine test of the Jedi control system Sabaoth had spent so much of his time teaching the rest of them.
What in the name?
Abruptly, Maning hunched closer to his sensor displays.
Master Sabaoth!
I see them,
Sabaoth said.
So this is the sort of enemy we face.
What is it?
Lorana asked.
Look at the warships, Maning said. See all those plastic bubbles on the hulls.
Lorana felt her chest tighten.
There are people in there.
Living shields,
Sabaoth confirmed, his voice thick with contempt.
The most evil and cowardly defense concept ever created.
What do we do?
Lorana asked, a sudden trembling in her voice.
We can't just slaughter them.
Courage, Jedi Jinsler,
Sabaoth said.
We'll simply shoot between the hostages.
They make no answer,
the Mascara said accusingly, as if outbound flight silence was Cardass's fault.
Perhaps they're still consulting among themselves, Your Eminence,
Cardass suggested. The Vagari ships had started to close the gap between themselves and outbound flight, moving together into groups of tight formation clusters that would provide them the protection of overlapping forward shields.
You will give them a new message,
the Mascara ordered.
The time for discussion is ended. You will surrender now, or...
And in the middle of the sentence, his voice abruptly dissolved into a confused burbling. Cardass frowned, pressing the comm link to his ear. The whole bridge seemed to have collapsed into the same helpless babbling, as if the entire crew had had a mass mental attack. Which was, he suspected, exactly what had happened. He looked out again at outbound flight, an unpleasant shiver running through him. He'd heard the stories about all the ways Jedi could use their mind control tricks to confuse attackers. Everything from creating false noises in their ears to making them unable to properly focus on controls or weapon systems. But while the stories also claimed that a group of them together could use that power on this massive a scale, he'd never heard of something like that actually happening. Until now.
So your tales were correct, Mithra Naruido murmured. Your Jedi have reached across the distance to the Vagari and numbed or destroyed their minds.
So it would seem, Doriana agreed, feeling a little numb himself. Predictably, it was Cav who broke the awed silence first.
And our part is to sit by and do nothing? He prompted.
Our part is to do that for which we have come, Mithra Naruido said. Reaching to his board, he keyed a switch. It is time for the Vagari to die.
The Vagari?
Cav echoed.
No! You were given my starfighters for use against outbound flight!
I was not given the starfighters at all.
Mithra Naruido corrected him coolly. Ahead, the droid starfighters were rising in waves now from their asteroid staging area, heading at full speed toward the clusters of Vagari warships.
I will choose how to use them.
Cav snarled something in his own language.
You will not get away with this,
he bit out.
Walk cautiously, Vice Lord,
Mithra Naruido warned, his glowing eyes flashing at the Nymoidian.
Don't forget that the starfighters aren't the only Nymoidian technology I've taken from you.
Doriana felt a sudden tingling on the back of his neck. He spun around, expecting to find the two droidicas Mithra Naruido had taken from the Dark Venge standing behind them in full combat stance. But there was nothing there.
No, Master Doriana, the combat droids are not here,
Mithra Naruido assured him.
They're where they can be of far more useful service.
And where is that? Doriana asked.
Where else?
Mithra Naruido said, smiling tightly.
On the bridge of the Vagari flagship.
The sudden multiple stutter of blaster fire in his ear sent Cardass twitching to the side, and he banged his elbow against the edge of the bubble as he hastily moved the comm link farther away. His head was still ringing, as the rhythmic fire of the droidicas was joined by the more deliberate shots from the four battle droids' rifles. Apparently,
Thrawn had had a secondary control pattern laid in beneath the program Cardass had set up earlier for the mascara. The sounds of shooting shifted subtly as the six droids began to move across the bridge, mowing down the helpless gunners and commanders. And as they systematically chopped off the head of the Vagari leadership hierarchy, the droid starfighters arrived. The first and second waves flashed overhead without slowing, skimming the hull barely 5 meters from Cardass's face as they drove toward the clusters of Vagari ships in the distance. The third wave arrived in full combat mode, their laser cannons raking the flagship with a brilliant sheet of fire. Cardass flinched back, but almost before he had time to be frightened, they too were passed, leaving torn pieces of shattered hull material and white jets of escaping air in their wake. Blinking against the multiple purple afterimages, he peered through the dissipating gases at the other bubbles around him, half afraid of what he would see. But the starfighters had pulled it off. In every single one of the bubbles within his view, the Jeroen hostages were still alive. Terrified, certainly. Some of them clawing mindlessly at the plastic as if trying to tunnel their way out. But they were alive. With Outbound Flight's Jedi preventing the Vagari gunners from defending their ships, and with the sharp-edged precision the droids' electronic targeting systems and close-approach attack had permitted, the starfighters had sliced their way neatly through the warship's hull between the Vagari's living shields. And not just aboard the flagship. All around him, Cardass could see clouds of debris and escaping air enveloping the other nearby Vagari warships. The haze scintillating with the fiery glow of the starfighters' drives as they finished each set of targets and moved on to the next. Already in this first attack, he estimated Thrawn's assault had taken out over a quarter of the alien warships. And still with no response from the remainder. The question now, he knew, was whether the Jedi control of the aliens would last long enough for the starfighters to finish the job. Switching on his macro binoculars, listening with half an ear to the one-sided carnage still going on beneath them on the bridge, he focused on Outbound Flight. Beside Doriana, Mithron Nuruodo took a deep breath. Chotra, he ordered. And moving as a single unit, the Chiss fleet surged forward. Time to join the party? Doriana asked, still watching in grim amazement as the waves of droid starfighters methodically cut their way across the Vagari ships. No, Mithron Nuruodo said. Time to start one of our own. And it was only then that Doriana saw that the Springhawk and the rest of the Chiss ships were heading for Outbound Flight. He closed his hands into fists, waiting tensely for the Dreadnought's gunners to spot this new threat and open fire. But nothing happened. The Springhawk flew completely through the turbolaser's effective combat range, passed unchallenged through the point defense zone, and with only minor turbulence, passed through the shields near the bow of the nearest Dreadnought. The other Chiss ships broke from the Springhawk's flanks, spreading out toward the other dreadnoughts as the Springhawk curved from its intercept vector to fly low across its chosen dreadnought's hull and opened fire. They hit the weapons blisters first, the brilliant blue fire of the Chiss lasers, tearing through armor and capacitors and charging equipment and digging deeply into the blisters themselves. The shield generators were next. The Springhawk zigzagging along the Dreadnought's hull as it targeted and destroyed each in turn. All done with the utmost efficiency, a small detached part of Doriana's mind noted, without a single wasted movement. Clearly, Mithron Nuruodo had made good use of the technical readouts he'd provided. And then, to his surprise, the Springhawk made a sharp turn away from the hull and headed again for deep space. Beyond the expanding cloud of destruction, he could see the other Chiss ships doing the same.
What's wrong? He asked.
Nothing is wrong, Mithron Nuruodo said. Why?
But you have ceased the attack, Cav said, clearly as bewildered as Doriana. Yet they lie helpless before you.
Which is precisely why I've stopped, Mithron Nuruodo said.
Jedi Master Sabaoth, leaders of outbound flight, your vessel has been disarmed, its ability to defend itself destroyed. I offer you this one final chance to surrender and return to the Republic.
What?
Cav yelped.
But you were to destroy them!
If and when you should command again, Vice Lord Cav, such decisions will be yours. Mithron Naruto said coolly. But not now. Outbound flight. I await your decision.
Through the echoing haze of dying minds still screaming at her, through the smoke and debris and distant moans of the injured, Lorana realized she was dying. Probably from suffocation, she decided, as she noticed that her lungs were straining, but that little or no air was reaching them. She tried to move, but her legs seemed pinned somehow to the deck. She tried to stretch out to the Force, but with the death agonies of the Vagari now joined by the much closer deaths of her own shipmates, she couldn't seem to bring her thoughts into focus. Something cold and metallic closed around her wrist. She opened her eyes to find a maintenance droid tugging at her arm.
What are you doing?
She croaked. It was a matter of mild surprise to discover that she had enough air even to speak. Experimentally, she tried to take a deep breath, and felt a welcome coolness as air flowed into her lungs. She blinked away some of the fog hazing her eyes and peered through the swirling debris. There was a long, jagged slash through the ceiling above her, undoubtedly the source of the weapon's blister's sudden decompression. Stretched across the gash were a dozen sheets of twisted metal that appeared to have been blown or pulled away from the walls. Half a dozen small metalwork droids were climbing across them, filling the room with clouds of sparks as they hastily welded the sheets into place over the gash. Lying on the deck halfway across the room, his arm stretching toward the ceiling as he used the Force to hold the still unwelded sheets in place, was Mening. Lorana couldn't see very much of his body with the wreckage of the control room scattered across her line of sight, but she could see enough to turn her stomach. He must have caught the full brunt of one of the laser blasts, taking both the agony of the shot itself, as well as the impact of the shards of shattered metal it had created.
Master Mening!
She gasped, trying to get up, but her legs still refused to work.
No, don't!
Mening said. His voice was strained, but still carried the full authority of a Jedi Master.
It's too late for me.
For... Lorana broke off, a sudden edge of horror cutting through her. With the attack and her own near suffocation, she completely lost her connection to the Jedi meld that had so successfully blocked the Vagari attack. Now, as she tried to stretch out to it again, she found that it had all but vanished.
No!
She whispered to herself, but there was no mistake. When their attackers had targeted the weapons blisters, they had knowingly or unknowingly targeted the Jedi as well. And with only one or two dazed and stunned exceptions, they were dead. All of them.
I should have tried stop him sooner,
Mening murmured, his voice weakening as he rapidly lost strength.
But he was... Jedi Master. Jedi Master.
With an effort, Lorana pushed back the paralyzing horror.
Don't talk, she said, trying again to move. Let me help you. No,
Mening said.
Too late for me.
But I can't just leave you,
Lorana protested. Again she tried to get up, and this time she succeeded.
I am far... beyond your help,
Mening said, a deep sadness in his voice.
Go. Help those who can still be helped.
But...
No!
Mening bit out, his face convulsing with a sudden spasm.
You're... Jedi! Take an oath! Serve others! Go!
Go!
Lorana swallowed. Yes, Master.
I...
She trailed off searching for the right words, but there weren't any. Perhaps Mening couldn't find any either.
Goodbye, Jedi Chinsler. he simply said, a ghostly smile touching his lips. Goodbye, Master Maning. Maning's smile vanished, and he lifted his eyes again to the repair droids and their work. Turning away, Lorana picked her way through the wreckage toward the door. She knew she would never see him again.
We made a bargain, Cav snarled. You were to destroy outbound flight for us.
I never made any such bargain, Mithron Naruto said. I agreed only to do what I deemed necessary to eliminate the threat posed by the expedition.
That was not what we wanted,
Cav insisted. You were in no position to make demands, Mithron Naruto reminded him. Nor are you now.
There was a sudden hiss from the comm.
So,
an almost unrecognizable voice ground out.
You think you've won, alien?
The display came alive, and a cold shiver ran up Doriana's back. It was Joris Sabaeth, pale and disheveled, his clothing torn and blood-spattered, one side of his face badly burned. But his eyes blazed with the same arrogant fire that Doriana had seen that day long ago in Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's office. He groped for Mithron Naruto's sleeve. Cav is right. You have to destroy them. If you don't, we're dead. Mithron Naruto's eyes flicked to him, then back to the comm.
I have indeed won. I have only to give a single order.
His hand shifted slightly on his control board, his fingertips coming to rest on a covered switch edged in red.
And you, and all your people, will die. Is your pride worth so much to you?
A Jedi does not yield to pride,
Sabaeth spat.
Nor does he yield to empty threats. He follows only the dictates of his own destiny.
Then choose your destiny, Mithron Naruto said. I'm told the role of the Jedi is to serve and defend.
You were told wrongly,
Sabaeth countered.
The role of the Jedi is to lead and guide, and to destroy all threats.
The unburned corner of his lip twisted upward in a bitter smile. And without warning, Thrawn's head jerked back, his whole body pressing back against his seat. His hand darted to his throat, clutching uselessly at it.
Commander!
Doriana snapped, grabbing reflexively for Mithron Naruto's collar. But it was no use. The invisible power that was choking the life out of him wasn't something physical that Doriana might be able to push aside. Sabaeth was using the Force, and there was nothing Doriana or anyone else could do to stop him. In a handful of minutes, Mithron Naruto would be dead. Lorana was in a turbolift car heading down the forward pylon when she felt Sabaeth's attack echoing through her mind like the sound of a distant hammer. For a minute she puzzled at it, sensing his anger and frustration and pride, wondering what in the world he was doing. And then abruptly, the horrifying truth sliced through her like the blade of a lightsaber.
No!
She shouted reflexively toward the turbolift car ceiling. Master Sabaeth, no! But it was too late. In his single-minded thirst for revenge, Joris Sabaeth, Jedi Master, had gone over to the dark side. The bridge crew was on it in a matter of seconds, shoving Doriana roughly aside and clustering around Mithron Naruto as they fought to free him from the unseen attack that was killing him. But their efforts were as useless as Doriana's had been. Standing at the edge of the frantic activity, Doriana looked at the comm display and tried desperately to think. If the Chiss attack had weakened Sabaeth enough, but there was no sign of weakness in the eyes blazing from that ruined face. Could Doriana shut off the display then, and at least rob the Jedi of his view of his victim? But Doriana had no idea where that control was, and he didn't speak any language the rest of the bridge crew understood. Besides, He wasn't sure that cutting off the display would do any good anyway. And then, his gaze dropped from Sabaoth's face to Thrawn's control board, the board and the red-rimmed switch. It might be nothing, but it was all he had. Pushing past the crewers who stood in his way, he flipped back the cover and pressed the switch. And then, even as they continued to pound mercilessly against the Vagari warships, the droid starfighters abruptly turned from their attack and fled. Cardass frowned, pressing the macro binoculars tighter against his face. A sizable percentage of the Vagari fleet was still untouched, the surviving ships scrambling madly for the edge of Thrawn's gravity projector field. Yet all of the starfighters were leaving. Had they drained their solid fuel engines already? He caught his breath. No. The starfighters weren't running away from the Vagari. They were running toward outbound flight. He was still staring in disbelief when the first wave hit. Not simply attacking, blasting away with laser cannons and energy torpedoes. They literally hit the dreadnoughts, slamming at full speed into their hulls and vaporizing in brilliant flashes with the force of their impacts. The second wave did the same, this group striking different sections of the dreadnought's hulls. Through the smoke and debris came the third and fourth waves, these groups pouring laser cannon fire and energy torpedoes into the damaged weapons blisters and shield generators. And with a sudden chill, Cardass understood. The first two waves of starfighters hadn't been trying to breach the dreadnought's thick armor plating. Their goal had merely been to create dents in the hulls at very specific points. The points where the interior blast doors were positioned. And now, with those doors disabled or warped enough to prevent a proper air seal, the rest of the starfighters were opening the dreadnoughts to space. More clouds of debris were blowing away from outbound flight's flanks as the starfighters blasted their way through the hulls, sweeping new waves of sudden death through the outer areas of the dreadnoughts. But for all the effect the attack had on him, Sabaoth might not even have noticed it. His face remained as hard as anvil stone, his eyes burning unblinkingly across the Springhawk's bridge. And Mithron Naruado was still dying. Doriana curled his hands into helpless fists. So it was finally over. If this second assault had failed to kill Sabaoth, it was because he'd hidden himself well away from the vacuum that had now snuffed out all life in the dreadnought's outer sections. Even given the thinner bulkheads and blast doors of the ship's interior sections, there was no way even droid starfighters could clear out the maze of decks and compartments in time. An odd formation caught his eye as it shot into view outside the canopy. A pair of starfighters flying in close formation with a fat cylinder tucked between them. Not just one pair, Doriana saw now, but 10 of them, heading at full speed toward outbound flight. He remembered Cav mentioning this particular project of Mithron Naruado's and the Vice Lord's contemptuous dismissal of the cylinders as some sort of useless fuel tanks. Frowning, he watched as in ones and twos the starfighter pairs drove through the newly blasted holes in the dreadnought's hulls and disappeared inside. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, abruptly, a haze of pale blue burst outward from the openings, nearly invisible amid the floating clouds of wreckage. And with a sudden gasp of air, Mithron Naruado collapsed forward against his board.
"Commander!" Doriana called, trying to get past the circle of crewers. "I'm all right,"
Mithron Naruado panted, rubbing his throat with one hand as he waved off assistance with the other.
"I think you got him," Doriana said, looking over at the comm display. Sabaoth was no longer in sight. "I think Sabaoth's dead."
"Yes,"
Mithron Naruado confirmed, his voice quiet.
"All of them are dead."
A strange sensation crept up Doriana's back. "That's impossible," he said. "You only had one or two of those bombs in each dreadnought."
"One was all that was necessary,"
Mithra Nerudo said with a sadness that Doriana had never heard in him before.
They're a very special sort of weapon. A very terrible sort. Once inside the protective barrier of a war vessel's outer armor, they explode into a killing wave of radiation. The wave passes through floors and walls and ceilings, destroying all life.
Doriana swallowed. And you had them all ready to go.
Mithron Nuruido's eyes bored into his. They were not meant for outbound flight, he said.
And there was an expression on his face that made Doriana take an involuntary step backward.
They were intended for use against the largest of the Vagari war vessels.
Doriana grimaced. I see.
No, you do not see,
Mithron Nuruido retorted.
Because now, instead, we'll need to destroy the Vagari remnant aboard the disabled vessels in shipboard face-to-face combat.
He pointed out the canopy.
Worse, some of the war vessels and civilian craft have now escaped to deep space, where they'll have time to rebuild, and perhaps one day will again pose a threat to this region of space.
The battle had been over for nearly 3 hours, and Cardass was starting to get seriously bored when he finally heard the rhythmic tapping at his back. He half turned over and wrapped the same pattern with the edge of the macro binoculars. Then, turning back around to face the stars, he worked the kinks out of his muscles and waited. It came in a sudden flurry of activity. Behind him, the door to his prison popped open, and he felt the sudden tugging of vacuum at his lungs and face as the air pressure in his bubble exploded outward, shoving him backward out into the corridor. He caught a glimpse of vac-suited figures surrounding him as he was enveloped in a tangle of sticky cloth. Before he could do more than scrabble his fingertips against it in an effort to push it away from his face, there was a harsh hissing in his ears, and the cloth receded from him in all directions. And a moment later, he found himself floating inside a transparent rescue ball.
Whoa!
He muttered, wincing as his ears popped painfully with the returning air pressure.
Are you all right?
A familiar voice asked from a comlink connected to the ball's oxygen tank.
Yes, Commander. Thank you, he assured the other. I gather it all worked as planned?
Yes,
Thrawn confirmed, his voice carrying an odd tinge of sadness to it.
For the most part.
One of the other rescuers leaned close, and to his surprise, Cardass saw that it was the human who'd introduced himself aboard the Dark Venge as Commander Stratus.
Cardass,
Stratus demanded.
What are you doing here? Luring the Vagari into my trap, of course,
Thrawn said, as if it were obvious.
Or had you forgotten that the Chiss do not engage in preemptive attacks?
I see,
Stratus said, still eyeing Cardass.
So those spy accusations you were throwing around aboard the Dark Venge were nothing but smoke. Something to cover you in case the whole thing fell apart. It was protection, yes, but not for me,
Thrawn said. He gestured, and the rest of the group began maneuvering Cardass's rescue ball down the corridor.
It was to protect Admiral Ar-Alani, the officer commanding the transport that arrived an hour ago to take the free Jerun slaves back to their world, and who couldn't afford to be even unofficially involved in any of this,
Stratus said, nodding.
But who could make sure to look the other way at all the right times, leaving you and Cardass to take the blame if anything went wrong.
Never mind the blame, Cardass put in. What happened with outbound flight? I saw the starfighters take off after it. Thrawn and Stratus exchanged looks.
We were forced to go farther than I'd hoped,
Thrawn said. Cardass felt his heart freeze in his chest. How much farther?
They're dead,
Thrawn said quietly.
All of them.
There was a long silence.
There wasn't any choice,
Stratus said into his numbness.
Sabaoth was using his Jedi power to try and strangle the commander. There was no other way to stop him.
Did you ever give them the chance to just leave and go home? Cardass retorted.
Yes,
Thrawn said.
More than just one chance,
Stratus added.
More than I would have offered them, in fact. And if it matters any,
I was the one who actually pushed the button.
Cardass grimaced. You're sure there aren't any survivors?
The dreadnoughts were taken out by radiation bombs,
Stratus told him.
We haven't actually sent anyone over yet to check, but if the commander's weapon stats are accurate, there's no way anyone could have lived through that.
So you got what you wanted after all, Cardass said, feeling suddenly very tired. You must be happy. Stratus looked away.
I'm content, he said. I wouldn't say I'm happy.
The rescued Droons had been herded into the cargo bay, the only place aboard the transport big enough to hold them all. Standing to the side, just inside one of the bay doors, trying to stay out of the way of both the Droons and the Chiss crewers moving about them, Cardass looked out at the multitude, his heart and mind fatigued beyond anything he'd ever experienced.
Even now, they don't seem to believe it,
a voice murmured from his left. Cardass opened his eyes. Thras was standing beside him, a strange expression on his face as he gazed across the crowded bay.
Syndic Thras, Cardass greeted him. I didn't realize you were aboard.
Admiral Ar-Alani suggested I come,
Thras said, his eyes still on the Droons.
She seemed to think she and I and my brother could now resolve the question of the Vagari goods being held at Krustai and allow you and your companions to go on your way.
He turned his eyes onto Cardass.
Now that you and I have apparently served our purposes.
Cardass held his gaze without flinching.
I have no problems with having been a part of your brother's plan, he said evenly. Neither should you.
I was manipulated and controlled, Thras said.
For your own protection, Cardass countered. If Thrawn and Ar-Alani had brought you into the plan, your future would have been just as much on the line as theirs were.
And as they are now,
Thras pointed out darkly,
the 9 ruling families will not stand for such an illegal and immoral attack.
Number 1, Cardass said, lifting a finger. This system is within the patrol region of the Chiss expansionary fleet. That makes it Chiss territory. Number 2, the Vagari arrived in force with the clear intent of causing harm. That makes Commander Thrawn's action self-defense, as far as I'm concerned.
They were here only because you had so enticed them.
I'm not bound by your rules, Cardass reminded him. Besides, as Admiral Ar-Alani will attest, your brother had publicly labeled me as a possible spy. If I got desperate enough to go to the Vagari for help in freeing my companions, you can hardly blame that on him.
Thras's lip twisted. No, Thrawn has always been very good at hiding his hand when he wishes to do so.
Which seems to me takes care of the legal aspects, Cardass concluded.
As to your other objection,
he gestured toward the Droons. I defy you to look at these people and tell me how freeing them from tyranny could possibly be immoral.
The morality of an action is not determined by the results,
Thras said stiffly. His face softened a little.
Still, in this case, it's a hard point to argue.
I saw the way the Vagari treated their slaves, Cardass said, shivering at the memories of the Droons the Mascara had murdered in cold blood. In my opinion, the universe is well rid of them.
I would tend to agree, Thras said. But Aristarchra Chafor Bintrano may not see things so clearly.
Cardass frowned. What does he have to do with anything?
He and vessels of the 5th ruling family are on their way here, Thras said grimly. I had a brief communication with him just before leaving Krustai. I suspect he intends to place Thrawn under arrest.
Cardass felt his throat tighten.
Does Thrawn know about this?
No. We need to tell him. And fast, Cardass said grimly.
Do you know where he is? I believe he and Admiral Ar-Alani have gone across to inspect outbound flight.
Then let's get over there, Cardass said.
Come on. My shuttle's in one of the portside docking stations.
They found Thrawn and Ar-Alani on the bridge of the main command ship, standing amid a bustling crowd of Chiss crewers, methodically checking out the still-active control consoles. There were a lot of bodies there, too, lying haphazardly all over the deck. For once,
Cardass hardly even noticed.
"Ah, my brother," Thrawn said, as Thras and Cardass made their way through the maze of consoles. "Are the Jeroons being properly cared for?"
"Never mind the Jeroons," Cardass put in before Thras could answer. "Aristocrat Chiforn Bintrano is on his way with a fleet of Fifth Family ships."
"On whose authority do they fly?"
Aurelani demanded.
"The Aristocra's own, I presume," Thrawn said. His eyes narrowed in thought. "How soon until they arrive?"
"They could be here at any time," Thras said. "I suspect he's coming to raise charges against you."
"In that case, he would hardly need a fleet of vessels," Thrawn pointed out. "No, the Aristocra has something far more profitable in mind."
"Outbound flight?" Cardass asked.
"Actually, I expect he's hoping to take possession of the remains of the Vagari fleet," Thrawn said.
"But you're right. Once he sees outbound flight, that priority will definitely change."
"He can't do that," Thras protested. He looked at Aurelani.
"Can he?"
"Not legally," Aurelani said, her voice tight. "But as a practical matter, if he's brought enough vessels, there'll be no way for us to stop him."
"The Council of Families," Thras began,
"will certainly object," Aurelani cut in. "But the procedure will be long and complex. And in the meantime, the Fifth Family will be coaxing the secret from their new prize," Thrawn said. Thras hissed, a startlingly reptilian sound.
"We can't allow that," he said. "Possession of outbound flight by any one family could destroy the balance of power for decades to come."
Cardass nodded, a hard knot forming in his stomach. The thought of getting their hands on droid technology alone had been enough to lure the Vagari to their destruction. How much more of an edge would the droids plus the rest of outbound flight's technology give Chiforn Bintrano's family?
"We'll have to stall him," Aurelani said. "We must keep his people off this vessel until the defense fleet units I've summoned can arrive."
"They won't be in time," Thrawn said.
"We need to take outbound flight to a military base immediately and have it declared defense fleet property."
"How long a trip are we talking about?" Cardass asked dubiously. "This thing's taken a lot of damage."
"It will push the systems to their limit," Thrawn conceded. "But we must try. It would be better for outbound flight to be destroyed than to let any single family claim it."
There was a flicker of movement at the corner of Cardass's eye. He turned to the canopy. Just as the last of a dozen large Chiss ships came out of hyperspace.
"Too late. He's here."
Aurelani muttered a word that had never come up in Cardass's language lessons.
"We'll have to make do with the crewers you already have aboard," she said. "Quickly! Before..."
She broke off at a twitter from Thrawn's comlink. Thrawn looked out at the ships, then reluctantly pulled the device from his belt.
"Commander Mithran Nuruodo."
"Commander, Aristocrat Chiforn Bintrano of the Fifth Ruling Family is signaling the Springhawk. He demands your immediate presence aboard the Chaff Exalted."
Thrawn's eyes flicked to Aurelani.
"Do not acknowledge his signal," he ordered.
"It was not a request, Commander."
"Do not acknowledge,"
Thrawn repeated, and clicked off the comlink.
"Thrawn, you can't simply refuse an Aristocra's direct order,"
Thras objected.
"I haven't yet received any direct orders from the Aristocra," Thrawn said evenly. "Cardass, find me the helm."
"Yes, sir," Cardass said, peering at the nearest consoles. And then Aurelani's comlink twittered. All eyes turned to her.
"Clever," was all she said as she removed it from her belt and keyed it on. "Admiral Aurelani."
"This is Aristocrat Chiforn Bintrano. I've been unable to contact Commander Mithran Nuruodo, and I suspect he's refusing to communicate with me. As an aristocrat of the Fifth Ruling Family, I order you to find and detain him pending a hearing on his recent military activities."
Aurelani hesitated, and Cardass held his breath. Then, with clear reluctance, she nodded.
"Acknowledged, aristocrat. I hear and obey." She shut off the comlink. I'm sorry, Commander, she said to Thrawn. I have no choice but to place you under detention.